Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Gonna be bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. Gonna be bright.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you'd like to make during the broadcast, please feel free to write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Before I introduce my special guest, I'd just like to make a comment or two here about my show from last week with my guest George. And I had a lot of responses, more so than any other program, with people writing to me and making comments all over the place. And I think a lot of women were disturbed by his interview, because maybe it hit too close to home in the reality that they haven't learned about or they suspected. I've had about 5 letters this week just from women saying that after listening to that show, now they realize that any doubts they had are now gone from their mind. And some people were really critical of George. They were saying that, you know, look at all the bad he did, and it wasn't like he really felt sorry. I mean, you know, he felt as sorry as any gay man's going to feel. And he was at least a responsible gay man, where he was taking care of his kids, taking care of his ex-wife. You know, he moved them down south where he is because, you know, he wanted to remain a family unit. And he really felt bad for his wife, you know, and he tried reassuring her. I know when I met him many years ago, he felt very bad that he had, you know, his wife had found out, of course, but that he had hurt her so much because, you know, he couldn't think with his head on top, he was thinking with the head on the bottom. I guess that's the best way to put it. But, you know, that's very typical of gay men who are in marriages. So any women who are listening to this, I think that if you get nothing more out of it, it makes you realize that any doubts you have about your husband's and acting out and that they're just being a great guy and they're 32 years old and not having sex with you. If you think they're really not having sex with somebody, then you're wrong, because men are sexual animals and gay men are very sexual animals. So I hope you understand that if you haven't had a chance to listen to that broadcast with George from last week and you want to learn more about gay male thinking, he was very honest, very upfront. He didn't cut any corners and he didn't hide anything. So it's a really good broadcast to listen to in case you're having any doubts. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my special guest tonight, and she's certainly special to me because I sometimes have the wonderful opportunity of meeting face-to-face women who are part of my support network, and I've had the ultra pleasure of meeting this person more than once at our healing weekend, so I'd like to introduce Deb. Deb, thank you so much for being on our show.
Well, thank you, Bonnie. I appreciate your asking.
Yeah, I'm really happy you came on my show because, you know what, we're doing stories of women who are going through this, and everybody has a different story to tell. And, you know, not everybody has left their marriages, you know, before, you know, at the end. And some people just stay there and linger for many different reasons. And, you know, they have all kinds of feelings and doubts while they're going through this, and it really screws up their heads. But they hang in there anyway. And, you know, just trying to make sense out of everything. So you're one of those women who just hung in, correct?
I did hang in for far too long.
Mm-hmm.
Way too long.
So maybe you can go back and let's start your story where it started with your ex, with your husband.
All right. My husband and I were married in June of 1977. I had two children, age 5 and 6, and I had been divorced for about 18 months when I started dating Bill. And he had been my advisor in college. I was a history and political science major, and he was my advisor. And we were friends, and he knew my situation. I had been married to an abusive spouse prior to my marriage with Bill. And I certainly was looking for a relationship where I would be taken care of, and more importantly, my children would be taken care of. As I said, they were 5 and 6, and I was concerned that, you know, not many men would take on a wife and two children, and he seemed very eager. He was he loved kids, and he always said he wanted a family. And so I had been dating someone that I was madly in love with between the two, between my ex-husband and Bill, and I made the comment to him one night that I, you know, loved him, and he said, "No, you don't," to me, and I took that as, well, no, you don't love me, so I just sort of ended that relationship pretty quick, and this was somebody I'd known from high school, so it's somebody I had known for a long time. Later, we'll discuss that person again, because he had a huge impact on my discoveries and coming to terms with my life as it related to Bill. As I said, we were married in June of 77, and in September of 77, I had gone to bowl in a Sunday league that I belonged to, and we had a power outage here in Dover, and bowling was canceled, and I came home. And I came home to find him with a Playgirl magazine spread all over the floor, and he was pantless on the sofa masturbating to the Playgirl magazine, and I stood there absolutely dumbstruck and unable for I don't even know how long to say anything, and I finally said, "What the hell are you doing?" And he grabbed the magazine and he tore out of the room. We had a double entrance family room, so he was able to run out the opposite side from where I was. And I was so thunderstruck that I was rendered speechless. I didn't know what to say. And so that later that night, I said to him, is this something you want to pursue? Because back in 77, you know, the gay thing was not prominent like now. It wasn't something you discussed. It was something you knew about, maybe. And so I was very naive myself. And he said to me, well, if it was something I wanted to pursue, you would probably leave me. And I said, I don't know. And so it disappeared for the longest time. And there were not very many clues along the way, other than I did find a huge box of gay porn in our basement about maybe a month after that. And I did ask him, maybe 5 years ago, why he never got rid of it. And his answer to me was, well, he couldn't very easily put it in the trash because somebody might find it. And I thought, well, and I said to him, well, if it wasn't important to you, you would have gotten rid of it before we were ever married. So, you know, along the way, you asked me one time if there were clues. There was none. So as the years developed, we had an opportunity in 1994 to live in Europe for a year, a sabbatical year for him, at the University of Leiden in the Netherlands. And we had a wonderful year there. But when we came home, he began to become depressed. And that was when really the bottom sort started to fall out of our marriage. So we had been married, 17 years, I guess. And I persisted, and I commonly say to my therapist that I lost myself after we came back from Holland, because I tried everything in my power to do whatever I could to make our marriage work. And I had no conception that I was married to a narcissist until I started with my counselor and therapist, who I adore. And he even confronted Bill about his narcissism. So Mark has said to me many times, your issue with your husband wasn't as much that he was gay as that he was a classic narcissist who made you feel like you were unimportant and that he was the big cheese in the relationship. And I definitely see that. And from all I've read about narcissism, and I see it as a common thread on the straight pages, that many of these women are married to a narcissist, and it's a very demeaning and devaluing position to put yourself in. And I know firsthand, because I lost myself in our relationship. I became, as I said to you at our last healing workshop, when Margolis did her thing about narcissism, that I never felt like I was enough for him. And it's taken me years to realize that I was enough, but it wasn't what I wasn't enough for him because I wasn't what he needed. But it has taken a long time to realize that I had nothing to be ashamed of, though I was shamed, and that's also an awful place to be. So, I just
at any given time, did he ever admit to you that he was gay?
Never. No, and Mark said to me, he'll go to his deathbed. Mark met with him twice. I went to Mark twice, and by the way, my therapist is gay, and he's the best thing that ever happened to me. he said to me, would he be willing to come? And I said, well, he might. And so I took him, and he said, Debbie has asked me for only one thing, and that only one thing she wants from you is to say that you're sorry for all the years that you tried to put the blame for the relationship on her. And he, you know, did the narcissistic dance, and Mark said to him, well, he said, I've given you an hour to apologize, and for some reason, whatever it is, you just won't. And Bill said to him, well, maybe next time. So, no, he never acknowledged, and he never apologized. So, he died a year ago in January, so we never had a tumultuous divorce. But he did say 36 hours before he died that he looked over at me and he said, you know, I know you stopped loving me a long time ago. He said, but I never stopped loving you. And I said to him, Bill, I never stopped loving you. I said, you just made it impossible for either one of us to have the love we deserved. And then he sat there for a couple of minutes and he said to me, well, he said, if I've hurt you, I'm sorry. So that's the closest I got to an acknowledgement or an apology. And then that was on a Thursday night, and Saturday morning he when I went back to wake him up, he had died in his sleep. So and that was troubling as well. So,
you know, you spent how many years with him altogether?
40.
Which is a lifetime, right?
It's more than a lifetime. Yeah, and the other day I saw something online that a woman wrote about humiliation and shame. And I never, in all the years that I struggled with him and with our relationship, I never spoke to anyone about it until, as I said, the reentry of my friend from high school that I was madly in love with. We were at a wedding in Connecticut, and he had sent me a Facebook message. Now, I had not heard from him in 39 years, and so when I got it, I literally froze, and I could not even respond. It took me 5 days to even accept. And when I did, he said, did I still live in Dover? And I said, yes. And I said, where do you live? And he said, Connecticut. And I said, well, we're going to be in Connecticut for a wedding. And I said, maybe we can get together and have lunch. And so we did. And I felt absolutely zero. I was so numb from the mental abuse that I put up with Bill that I absolutely had no feeling whatsoever. So, but he wrote me back, thanks for lunch, for having lunch. It was great catching up with you. And he wrote, and I'm so happy you have the wonderful life you so richly deserve with Bill. And it was literally the straw that broke the camel's back, because it just was like a hammer blow to me to have somebody write that. And it took me 4 days to respond to his comment. And when I did, it was the very first time I had ever shared. And what I said to him after I wrote and rewrote and wrote and rewrote and erased, I said, it was great seeing you too. I enjoyed lunch. I said, life isn't always, and I remember it like I wrote it 5 minutes ago, life isn't always what it seems. I said, it seems my husband prefers men/boys to his wife. And then I hit send before I could change my mind. And so he said, wrote back a couple days later, "I'm sorry, things aren't wonderful in Camelot. If you ever need to talk, call me." And so I did. And he gave me the strength to get the help that I needed. And I called you and I called the Straight Spouse Network. And that began my path to getting this out in the open, because keeping it inside was the worst thing I could possibly have done. So, and to any of your listeners, if they keep it a secret, it only hurts themselves more than anything.
I think, your case is different in some ways, Deb. I think that, it's important for people to understand that he has never willingly given you an admission that he's gay.
No,
and
he never did.
And you hadn't caught him in anything gay, other than the pornography, right?
Which was extreme and very worrisome. And I remember calling you because I had agonized over telling my children about our situation. They knew something was wrong between us. And my daughter said to one of my friends, "I wish they could be happy, and maybe they'd be happier separated or divorced." And so we were all together about 5 years ago or 6 years ago for Thanksgiving out in California at my daughter's, and I wanted to tell the three of them together, but I could never get them together and without Bill there. And so I went and told my youngest, who it was our biological child together, and she said, "Mom, we already know." And I said, "You know?" She said, "Yes." She said, "Every time he had a computer issue and his computer crashed, I saw what he was looking at." And she said, "I thought you knew." And I said, "No, I had no idea. I mean, I said I knew he looked at porn, but I had no idea the scope and the depth of what he was looking at." And she said, "And there's more." And I said, "And what could be more?" And she said, "Well, my TW and I," and TW is her brother, "we're worried that he might be a pedophile because of the sites he's looking at," and that just utterly almost did me in. And I remember calling you immediately, and you said to me, you gave me the analogy of the McDonald's and the Big Mac or whatever it was, and I to this day I don't believe he was a pedophile. I think he just liked 20-something boys, and I don't think he ever sexually acted out, though I have no proof one way or another. Mark isn't so sure, but I don't think he did. And if he did, he had ample opportunity because he was lecturing all over the world and on cruise ships, as he was a maritime historian, and also all over the United States doing maritime lectures and whatnot. So he had ample opportunity when I wasn't around, but my gut says no.
Well, I think that, women don't want to believe it's possible, because then they would feel even more stupid, and I think that's human nature, about it. And, I have to really agree with Mark. There's just no way he lived all those years. How was your sexual relationship with him from the beginning?
Awful.
Right. There probably wasn't any kind of passionate love making, right?
There was none. In fact, Mark said to him, you didn't have any kind of sexual history together before your wedding. And Bill said, "Once." And he said, I was brought up where you didn't do that until you were married. And he came from a very I don't know if the word's puritanical, but his parents, his mother in particular, was very anti any kind of show of affection. And so I think Bill got a lot of that from his mother. And no, there was no passion. There was no intimacy. It was just a physical act that he, I think he did because he figured if he didn't, then I would, you know, suspect more than, you know, more than, oh, well, I'm just not interested. So, and he was never interested. So
he may have performed for you for a while, you know. Like I say, it was a performance, right?
Yeah, and that's what he used to say. He said, well, I can't teach all – he used to say to me, I can't teach all day and perform all night. And that's exactly what the word he used was perform.
Mm-hmm.
And so no. And then other than Jim, my friend who encouraged me to get help, when I went to my OBGYN one time for my annual, she said to me, you're not having sex. And I said, no. And she said, why? Is it painful? And I said, no. And so she said, well, if it is, we can do something about that. So the next year I went back and she said, well, I see you didn't take my advice. And I said, no. And she said, why not? And I told her that I was married to a gay man, and she was dumbfounded. So, so when I saw the woman post about humiliating things the other day, I thought I wrote that that was my most humiliating thing I had to do, was to say to somebody, no, I'm not having sex because I'm married to a gay man, and so gradually I began to talk about it, and the more I talked about it, the better I felt. However, it didn't do anything for our relationship or make it any easier to deal with, as I said, his narcissism and his blame. And it really started to utterly fall apart in 2008. We had come home from a month in Europe on a cruise, and my mother was diagnosed with lung cancer, and I asked him if he would object if I stayed with her in Wilmington, which is, you know, an hour away from here, and he said no, absolutely not. And so I went up to be with her 5 days a week, and then I came home for weekends. And not once while I was up there did he ever offer to come take me to lunch or help or anything. And that's when his porn addiction really kicked in. And he became much more distant and much more argumentative and much more critical, and nothing I did was right. And so
I remember when you first got in touch with me, you had mentioned even that, you know, when you suggest, you know, you talk to him about, you know, having intimate relationships, he was saying, well, it's your fault because you have a bad back.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, I do remember that. Yes. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, because I forgot. Yes, it was my fault because I had a bad back. I said, and we had a flood in our basement, and I spent 3 months cleaning the basement while he sat upstairs and probably looked at porn, and I cleaned up all his moldy books and the mold on the floor and ripped up carpet and drug it upstairs. But my bad back prevented me from having sex. Yes, I thank you for reminding me of that, because now I can laugh about it. Then I was just ready to stab him.
Well,
yeah.
It's a breakdown over the years of your, you know, first of all, I just want to say a couple comments before you go on. You went into this marriage after coming out of an abusive marriage, correct?
Yes. Physically abusive.
Was it physically abusive relationship? And how long were you married to that man?
Six and a half years.
Okay, so you were married to him for 6.5 years, which may not sound like a long time to somebody, but when you're being abused, every minute is long. And
yes, but
every
the
day
abuse
you're just
was
trying
only
to survive.
Right, but that
yeah,
abuse
and
was only the last 3 years.
But whatever. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't
yes.
all perfect in the first 3 years, right? But, you know, once
it
they start abusing
too, it wasn't too bad. In the beginning,
yeah,
it wasn't bad.
But it just, well, usually with physical abuse, that doesn't start in the beginning. It builds up over time, you know, because this way, they could just say, oh, my God, I don't know why I did that. And then you feel bad for them, and you stay, and you get a hit again. You know, it's different, you know, progressions through, you know, physical abuse. But
and
your
his
company
abuse
came out,
was more toward the children than me.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and that was the deal breaker. There was no way I was going to let him harm one of the kids, and so I walked away from that.
Which is very admirable, and you know, like I say, you're already very vulnerable because after you come out of an abusive situation, you know, mentally it screws up your whole head, and you're just not really strong. And you know what? How many years was it between the time you left your marriage to the time you met Bill?
Well, I had already known Bill. He was my history professor in college. So
okay.
I already knew him when I was married to Tom.
Okay. So then after that, how long was it till you got in touch with him or you started going out with him?
About a year after the divorce.
Okay. So you gave yourself a year, which is, you know, like I say, healing is a process. It takes a lot of time. But a lot of times after coming out of an abusive marriage, I see this happening very many, you know, in many cases with our women, including me. You know, after you come out of a bad relationship, whether it's because it's abuse physically, mentally, sexually, whatever it is, you know, you feel so drained and so washed away, and you're looking for some kind of validation, you know, that you want to be loved, because all of us want to be loved. And then when we find somebody that we think we can love and they could love us, you know, a lot of times we'll jump into something with blinders on, without seeing everything. And I give you a pass on the gay thing, you know, because in 1977, I was married 1 year later in 78. I didn't understand gay. If I would have found gay magazines in my husband's drawer, you know, I would have said to him, what are these doing here? And he would have said to me, I have no idea how they got there. I would have said very happily, good. And even if I knew that he had done something, because I was going with a guy before him who had done something, but he said, well, I went through a phase, I checked it out, I wanted to just make sure what I am. And I bought that story because if you can remember back in the 1970s, as the aftermath of the 60s, we were very sexual kinds of people. It wasn't, well, many of us were, you know, out there having sex. And, you know, it still would never equate to us, why would a gay man want to be with a woman? I mean, I thought gay were just people who wanted to be with other people of the same sex. There would have been no doubt in my mind on either one of those, the guy before my ex or my ex, that to think that they were gay. They didn't, you know, we've been socialized to believe the effeminate, flamboyant men that used to be on television were gay, like Liberace or Paul Lynde, you know, the
exactly.
television people who were always swishy. To us, that was gay. And I knew a lot of people like that. I knew they were gay. But for guys who don't look gay or don't act gay or don't, you know, pretend to be gay, who are acting to be straight, because they're straight acting, but they're not straight. They're just acting the role. I would say there'd be no way for us to know. And even if you found the magazine back then of porno, maybe you would have thought about it for a minute, but then thought, well, who knows, maybe he was curious about it, right?
Right. Right.
I mean, if you have no definite proof, it's very hard to put your finger on it. And that's what took me,
well,
you know, a few years to get a hold on my marriage, what was going on.
a month into, well, let's see, we were married the 4th of June and about the 9th of September, so what's that, 2 months, June, July, August, 3 months. Later, I find him with a playgirl with, you know, and I knew something was wrong and definitely not normal. And he made a comment right before we were married. Well, if we have sex, we can schedule, now that he used this word, we can schedule sex maybe on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday basis or a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday basis. And I said to him, well, you know, it's not something you really schedule. It's not like a history class that you're teaching. I said, I'm not sure I buy that. But, you know, I didn't think much of it other than he was naive and he had never been in a sexual relationship with a woman before. And he broke up with someone that he had dated for 2 years. He told me she broke up with him because he wouldn't have sex with her. And, you know, I never questioned him later about that. But I'm wondering, she's a psychologist now, and I wonder if she knew he was gay.
Well, she probably knew he wasn't straight because, you know, once again, straight men don't act like that. And I had that conversation just yesterday with a wonderful woman, you know, who's very isolated and alone right now, who can't get a confession and whose husband will never say he's gay, but he's looking for threesomes, twosomes, transsomes, with trans people. And I said to her, maybe he's not gay, but guess what? He's not straight. Now I've come up with that new expression because for those men who will never admit to their dying day, like Bill, that they are gay, that's fine. You don't have to be, you know, say you're gay, but you can't say you're straight. You're unstraight. You can be in one of all those categories. You know, you could be GBTLIASUP, whatever letters they want to use. But unless it says straight, it's not straight. So that's the problem with some of these men who are very closeted. I mean, he was bold enough to go through porno, you know, in front of, I mean, he knew you were in the house. You already knew that you caught him, right?
Yeah, he did. And it was years before he started again. It was right after we came back from Holland and you had the web TV, you know, the precursor to internet. And I caught him a couple times looking at naked guys on that. And then he would quick turn it off or, you know, and hide what he was doing. And I let it go. And I just, I reached a point after my mom died where he had not touched me in probably a couple of months. And I rolled over, and this was on June the 2nd, 2009, because it was 2 days before our anniversary. And I said, I was rubbing his hip. And that was sort of just, it was nothing sexual. It was just sort of, I did that frequently to him. As just sort of a huggy, touchy, feely kind of thing. And he said to me, stop mauling me. And I took my hand off his hip like I'd been burned. And I said to him, I will never touch you again. And I laid in my bed, in that bed, every single night for 6 years. And he never touched me, never kissed me, nothing in 6 years. And when my dad died, I got the bedroom furniture he had from his house. And we have an in-law suite in this house, and I moved it into the in-law suite. And that night, I made the bed back there, and I moved back there. And he came back, and he got in the bed and laid down. And when I realized he was there, he said to me, well, we can't work on anything if you leave the bed. I said, you've had 7 years to work on things. I said
really?
It was never going to change, and I'm not coming back to the bed ever again.
Yeah,
and that,
like once
that
again,
was,
making it your fault, making it your blame, that you're the one who
right.
deserted the bed, you're the one who deserted the marriage, you're the one at fault, right?
But that was my last straw. So that was 2009, and it's taken 10 years of really working through the angst of how I lost myself in along the way. And I did lose myself. I lost confidence. I lost Debbie is what I lost. And your healing workshops went a long way to giving me the ability to push on. And it was funny, when you asked me to do this, I went back to get something out of the room that I wanted to read, and I had my journals back there, and I really can't advise strongly enough for women who don't write or journal that they do so, because when you look back, you just can't believe how far you've come. And I was so angry, and I was so bitter. And I had all these writings, and I looked at this, and I thought, wow, I was really in a bad, bad place. And I loved quotes. And so every day I would write in my journal a quote, and some of them were really dark and really depressing. But as I said, I never said anything to anybody. And at your first healing workshop that I gave to, when Kristen Cobley gave us our writing assignment, that was the beginning of my ability to finally start to work on myself. Do you remember the writing assignment she gave us?
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, I've had other speakers who have come to us, you know, especially one who was a specialist, you know, Maria, in journaling. And I've always said to women, you know, if you write down your feelings, you know, you look back a week from now, 2 weeks, a month, a year, and the longer you keep lingering in this, you know, the more you have to, you know, do something, which brings me to my next question of asking you this. You went through a lot of hard times, 40, you know, vacant years of a husband who was there, but not as a husband. He was there, just there. And somebody who couldn't appreciate you as a wife, but just maybe as a sister, cousin, friend. People say, and I'm sure they do ask you, is there a reason why you didn't leave?
There were several reasons why I didn't leave. One was... again, our children. However, after we came home from Holland, the only one home was Jennifer. And then I guess you become I don't know what the right word is, but I became like a robot, and I went about my day, and I played bridge 3 days a week, and I did my own thing. After the "you're mauling me" incident, and I just started to live my own life, which also annoyed the daylights out of him, because he could no longer control me by his narcissism. And I think that made things worse in some respects, because he became more nasty and more demeaning toward me. But I just decided I was just going to live my life, and he could live his. And we had a certain degree. Not one person had a clue. Everybody in this town thought we had the most perfect relationship, because, you know, we were everywhere. And I didn't want to give that up in some respects. I think it was a level of security, financial security, and he made the comment that if I left him, he would make sure that I suffered greatly. And I thought, well, I'm not, after all these years, I'm not going to do that. So I put up with it. Looking back,
I think the other issue, Deb, is that, I think the other issue is this, you know, you were isolated in the situation for many years, and you didn't find help until a few years ago. You know, I know when you contacted me, it was about, you know, 3.5 years, 4 years ago, when we first, you know, got in touch with each other, and then, you know, you started seeing things differently, but you were still living in that trap of a situation. So even as you started seeing things more clearly, and even though you started pushing ahead, you know, there's still so much damage that's done to you in these marriages. For many people, I just want to be honest, you know, they just can't pick up and go. And, you know, it's not that they don't have the ability to, it's that they're so trenched in there, you know, like you say, with so many different issues, and you make a life for yourself, and you figure, okay, I can live in the same house with him, I'm just going to do my thing, and... You know, I don't want you to feel like I'm judging you at all, because I'm not. You know, I'm just bringing out this point that there are women in your situation. But I think you have to be emotionally free first to become physically free. And I really believe in my heart that you would have left that marriage in time. If, you know, if he, Bill were still alive and you knew what you knew and you saw that, you know, he was just not making your life any better, I think that you really, at some point, may have left, you know, if he would have hung on. Do you think that's possible?
I don't know, because between 2009 and when he died, his health was declining, and I gave my all to try to help him, and thinking that if I did, then he would appreciate the effort I made and see that I wasn't the monster. But I don't really think it meant anything. And I think toward the end, we had an appointment at Hopkins because I think he had was dealing with Lewy body dementia. And so I began to see all this pattern, and I realized that, you know, that I felt honor bound to stay and take care of him, because in his good day he took care of me and he took care of our kids.
And believe me, I make no judgments. As I say, I mean, I went back and helped my ex-husband for the last year and a half he was alive, even though I hadn't talked to him for 2.5 years because of all the terrible things he's done to me over the years, that I was finally free of him. But we're empathic women, wouldn't you say that?
Yes. Yes. We're empaths, as I have discovered.
Right.
I read
women who are empaths.
Yes, they do, but I didn't know that. I read a quote in a book that I couldn't recommend more highly. So, as it turns out, the gay issue pops up in the book as well. Because she decides she's gay after being married. The book's called Untamed by Glennon Doyle. It's on the New York Times bestseller list, and she had a quote in there that resonated really with me, and it says, every time you're given a choice between disappointing someone else and disappointing yourself, your duty is to disappoint that someone else. Your job throughout your entire life is to disappoint as many people as it takes to avoid disappointing yourself. And I was like, wow, yes. Yes, indeed. And the two quotes that I have on my bulletin board now, after I took down many more, are, once you learn how to be happy, you won't tolerate being around people who make you feel anything less. And I really do firmly believe that, because one of my best friends, or I thought she was one of my best friends, when I finally told her about Bill, she said to me, well, you owe it to stay with him because he raised your children. And I looked at her and I said, did you owe it to your husband to stay with him after 30 affairs? and she never answered me. So I don't tolerate somebody telling me that it's a situation where I owe him anything. I think when you're married, it's a duality of souls, and that you support one another and you do things because you love one another, not because you feel obligated. And I felt more obligated than I felt love with Bill in the last 20 some years. And so Mark gave me a writing assignment in January, and the writing assignment was, well, because he knows that I spent a lot of time writing, and he said to me, you write so beautifully. He said, I want you to, it's been a year since Bill died, I want you to tell me how you've changed in the last year and what your thoughts are looking back. And I have never had any problem. If somebody gave me a pen and a piece of paper and told me to write, I could do it in an instant. I've written it four times, ripped it up four times, partly written it a couple times and thrown it away. And when I had my counseling session with him on Wednesday, I said, Mark, why am I having so much trouble with this? And he said, because you're happy and you're in a good place. And you think about this maybe once or twice a week instead of 20 times a day, and it's not important anymore. He said, but I know you'll get it written. And I said, yes, I will get it written, because when I write it, it'll be finished. It'll be a new chapter in a new book. And so that's how I feel about getting that written. And it is important that I do it, because I feel that it'll give me the final closure that I need to move on to the next chapter.
So let's go back to that for a few minutes. Let's tell people there is a next chapter, right?
There is a next chapter. It takes a long time to get there, but with the right support, and I think the support is critical.
Let's talk about you, Deb. You've met somebody wonderful, right?
I have. I've begun to see the wonderful guy that I told I loved years ago. We've started to see one another more frequently. And I'm in a good place with him, and he knows
and
my situation.
I mentioned that because you and I are both
very patient.
But you and I are not young kids, right?
No, we're not. I'll be 69 in August.
Yeah, you're just a year ahead of year behind you. So we were both in relationships with loving, caring men, where you can really tell the difference, right?
Oh, my God, there's no comparison.
Exactly. And
yes.
I say that to encourage women who are so much younger than us, who feel there's never going to be a chance again. There's always a chance. There's always a chance that you can meet your soulmate out there. But you have to be out there for them to meet you. Because while you're going through this, and initially while you're healing, you know, and you're going through all this emotional garbage, you know, it's really easy to make wrong choices just because you're feeling some kind of desperation to have somebody love you. And I always tell women, you got to wait, you know, clear your life up before you meet somebody and commit yourself. And again, you know, you could be in a bad situation. But there's definitely hope out to every woman there who's saying, well, I'll never meet somebody again. You can meet someone again. You just have to get healed, and you have to have a open mind and, you know, let your heart open again, and then love can fly in. I know I waited 11 years, Deb, after my marriage was over. 11 years I had to heal myself. I was so destroyed. And I was a single mom raising two little babies, you know, working so hard. The last thing I had on my mind was meeting someone. So, you know, some people do it more quickly than others. you know, other people take longer. Some people just want to be by themselves the rest of their lives, which is also absolutely fine. As long as you enjoy yourself, that's good enough. But you can't give up, and you can't say, well, I have to stay here, because if I don't stay here, I'll never meet anybody again. And a lot of times these guys make us feel that way. Like, I know my husband, always ex-husband, said to me, no one will ever love you the way I do. I mean, that was something he always threw in my face. Until to me, love became just like another four-letter word, like hate or S-H-I-T. You know, it could have replaced any of those words because it had no meaning for the way he treated me. So when he would say you never meet somebody to love you like I do, I became very grateful after a while. It was no longer something I had to worry about. But you don't really can't really see that while you're living in these situations, right?
That's for sure. I think that, you know, we try to forget the bad and focus on what's good right now, and, you know, love the people who are there for you and treat you the right way. And it makes life much easier. And as I said to Jim, I said, he was joking about how easy it was for me to now be intimate, and it was not, believe me. In the beginning, I was terrified, absolutely terrified.
Me too.
And so he was joking about, he said, you're easy, and I said, no, I'm not easy. I said, that's not a word you ever use with me. But I said to him, if you could never have sex again, just the fact that you can wrap your arms around me and just hold me is more than enough for me, because I said I never had that with Bill, ever.
Mm-hmm.
Never.
It's also that lack of intimacy. You know, sex and intimacy, they walk hand in hand. You know, and there can be times, like I say, when in your life, there was a time when my, you know, partner, he went through, you know, radiation for prostate cancer. And, you know, this was after we were into our relationship maybe 15 years when it happened. And he was not able to do anything because of that for at least 8 months. But we had the intimacy. And that's what, you know, it goes hand in hand. Even though we didn't have sexual relationships, we had intimate, hold me, hug me, caress me.
Yes, exactly. And that's what he asked me in the very beginning before we ever had, you know, were together. And he asked me what I wanted or what I needed, and I said touch and intimacy. I said sex is irrelevant. I said I just need kindness, and I need the ability to touch, because Bill would never let me touch him. And even when we did have sex, he would lay there like a snow angel with his arms out, and he would never touch me the whole time we had sex, and he always wanted me on top. So I just looking back, which I don't like to do. I like to look forward. It's hard to explain the things we do put up with, and I just know I never want to be there again.
And I'm sure you never will be. And Deb, I can't believe this hour went so fast. I really appreciate you being on the show, and maybe if you don't mind, we can continue this, you know, maybe in the fall, come back again. Because there's
right,
a lot of
that
things
would be
that
fine.
Haven't been
I
said
enjoyed
yet.
It.
Oh, you did a beautiful job.
That would be
job.
Wonderful. Thank
and
you.
And to all of our listeners.
And
you,
I would like to say something, Bonnie. I can't begin to thank you enough for all you do for all of us, because none of us would ever get through this without you.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. You know, I get back just as much as I give. People are wonderful to me, too, including you. You've always been there as a support system, not just to me, but to so many of our women who, you know, you're always there to listen to them and to help them. And I greatly appreciate that.
And I've met some wonderful, wonderful women through this organization.
That's right. Remember, straight wives are the best wives ever and the best
That's
women.
That's right. That's right.
So to our listeners, love to all of you. Deb, I love you, and I'll be talking to you again soon.
I love you, too. All right.
All right. Have a good week.
Take
care.
Thank you, Bonnie. Bye-bye.
All right. Good night.